Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Are you looking to develop your skills as a mental health therapist? Maybe you have a New Year's resolution to meet more colleagues. Well, I'd like to let you know that Connection Therapy is going to be offering courses and lunch and learn events for you to do just that. We start in January, so please check our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, for the schedule and to see how you can get involved. See you then. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. This is Dr. Brenda Moreau, and in this episode, I am finishing the review of Erickson's Developmental Stages for Children. This episode reviews the last childhood stage, stage 5, which runs from 12 to 18 years. Thank you for hanging in there with me listening to these and all the episodes. So let's remind ourselves, why have we reviewed all of these stages? Well, the stages are markers in time. They run the full human life cycle, and for me as a practicing clinician, they assist me during session to put a frame or some context to what I'm hearing. As a reminder, I started with the stages for adults in episodes 5 and 6 and reviewed how you can use the stages when you hear a positive projection so you can better understand what your adult patient may be saying with that positive projection. And then in episodes 18 through 22, I provided overviews of the first 4 child stages of development and how specific elements in each stage might show up in therapy. Essentially, I'm reviewing all these stages because there are some normal events that happen to humans as we mature through life. And as a mental health therapist, it is important to know what those are, so you can better understand what you are hearing and seeing in therapy sessions. And if you're not a mental health therapist and instead a person curious about psychology, hopefully you are enjoying seeing the world through these lenses and observing how things show up in life. Erickson titled this 5th stage, age 12 through 18 years, as identity versus role confusion. There are some similarities here with Freud's last stage of development, but for Freud, that last stage starts with puberty and then it goes beyond into the rest of the human life. So Erickson has further delineated adult stages where Freud did not. And this is part of why I prefer Erickson's stages, is that he highlights the childhood stages, but provides for some considerations of adult development as well. And earlier, I also mentioned something Erickson does that departs from the original thinking of the Freuds, is that his model considers factors that the culture in which one lives applies to their development. So he goes beyond the internal drives from Freud as the major reason for development, and he suggests it's more of a combination of what's happening inside of us as well as the environment in which we are growing and developing that combine to shape our overall selves. In reviewing the stages, Mitchell and Black describe this 5th stage as part of Erickson's most widely known concept, which was his formulation of ego identity that is associated with adolescence and includes the transition between childhood and adulthood. It is the point of intersection between the individual and the social world. That's from their book, Freud and Beyond. And we will have links to that on connectiontherapypodcast.com for you to find the exact quote if you would like to refer to it. And they also quote Erikson himself as describing how he intended to allow the meaning of identity to have a variety of forms, including a conscious sense of individual identity, a continuity of personal character, something he called an ego synthesis, so kind of a accumulation of different ego states, and an inner solidarity with a group's ideals. So finding one's identity from all of these perspectives and more as the individual warrants would be the successful resolution of this stage, according to Erikson. So the way I understand it is how he's framing this is like, identity is unique to the person, and so too is the way that one defines their identity unique to them. And coming to terms with that is a successful resolution of this stage. I mentioned in episode 18 how I call this stage the try-on coats stage. Perhaps it is the influence of my psychoanalytic training, but I think of the coats like personas, like different versions of the outside self. And the child is literally trying on a new coat each week or each session. When I was first training, I was a bit alarmed at how fast children can change in this age range. At this age, humans, as you might remember, are very impressionable. But what might have been lost to memory is just how fast everything moves at this stage. Children in this age range have an interesting mix of the need for novelty, like new things, and the need for things to be concrete and certain. So each week in therapy, they can be certain of friends and romantic interests, the career they will pursue, and more importantly, what they will be, a teacher, a veterinarian perhaps, and overall exactly what their future will entail. Then all these things change dramatically from week to week, and the only thing that remains constant is how much certainty they have in them each week. I have learned over the years that my best response is to make space for all these futures to exist in the therapy discussions, as this allows them the freedom to move, which is really what is being sought at this stage, the freedom to move their mind around what suits them. And that works great in a supportive environment like therapy. The mind is intensely active at this stage. Children can have entire relationships during the week between sessions. They are certain that everything their peers do is somehow a response or reaction to them, and they are often right about that. In fact, that is the best information to support us in working with adolescents is to reconsider how much their brains are changing right now, which causes a myriad of different experiences that for us as adults can be hard to empathize with because they are not just emotionally different at this stage, they are physically different as well. Despite their assertion that they are nearly an adult, children in this stage have brains that are still developing rapidly, trying to keep pace with the development of puberty. And this results in multiple things, including that the perception of time is different for someone in this stage than it is for an adult. This is theorized to be due to the enormous amount of brain activity happening for children in this stage. There are so many new things to learn about oneself and others that the brain is working quickly to assimilate all the information, which ends up giving a different perception of time. These brain developments result in changes in abilities and interest in risk-seeking, and at times, all-or-nothing thinking. As a mental health therapist, you're going to see all of these things in session. Another thing that happens here is a hypersensitivity to self-image. So even though I focus on good eye contact during sessions, With patients in this age range, I intentionally give them a break by looking away at times during the discussion. In any other circumstance, it might be considered rude, but patients in this stage appreciate it very much. Much like everything else when we are working with a younger human, as mental health therapists and perhaps as adults, we want to model the way through it. At least that is what has worked best for me. Their brains are going to be moving very quickly, but ideally, maturity will come when things can slow down some. Not to the point of being lethargic, but mainly to the point of being less reactive and more thoughtful. Something I do is to use a technique called mentalization, like mentalizing, but mentalization, which was developed by Peter Fonagy and some of his colleagues. And it is more in depth than I'm going to mention here, but what happens is I share my thinking process with adolescents. I don't do this in an annoying way. Well, hopefully not. If I do, I call it out that it might be annoying for them, which somehow makes it slightly less annoying. And while I'm sharing my thinking, I acknowledge that it may be incorrect. In this way, I demonstrate some flexibility and invite some collaboration as part of it. For example, when the patient and I disagree on what the best course of action is, I explain my reasoning while honoring theirs and showing that I'm taking into consideration their viewpoints. Then I explain why I'm going to make the decision I'm going to make, and I leave room for their frustration. In other words, they don't have to agree. To illustrate this way that mentalization works, at least how I apply it, I'll share an example of something that happened a lot during the pandemic. As you may know, many children are at risk of being contacted by an online predator. And this was very true when everything suddenly went online and there was not time to put all the necessary protections in place right away. For therapy, we had to start using telehealth at the time. And in some cases, patients had access to technology that they either hadn't developmentally matured into or maybe had been grounded from for a variety of reasons. To their credit, parents let them have devices, phones, tablets, or laptops back in order for these telehealth sessions to occur. And even though I tried hard along with my colleagues to make online therapy interesting, it sometimes isn't, especially early in the pandemic when after the new routine started to form, there were not many things to talk about in each session. So children in this stage in particular often tried to convince me to end session early, and their reasoning was very specific and in some cases compelling. But in using mentalization, I would explain to them that I would not end session early and would provide my reasoning by spelling it out. Something like, I hear what you're saying, and it sounds like you do have a lot of homework that you could get caught up on if we were to end session early. However, I want to do the things that support the goal you and your mom have of working to improve communication between you. We told your mom we would meet until 3 p.m., and so we need to do that. Or if it really is too difficult to continue today, then we need to let her know we are stopping early. If that's the case, would you please give the phone back to her and either I will let her know that we have changed our plans for today, or we can tell her together. A couple things are happening in this example. The first is I am explaining my thought process. So if the patient wants to, they can understand how I came to the conclusion on what our next steps are. Ideally, this encourages them to step through their own thinking a bit more, which slows it down, which hopefully enables better decisions. The second thing I'm doing in the way I phrase this is very intentional. In this case, the appropriate thing to do is to ensure their mother knows that the child has a device and is no longer in therapy, since in this particular generic example, this has been a concern of late. And by generic, I mean that this is something that happened quite frequently during the pandemic. So I'm going to ensure that their mother knows that they have a device back. That part's not negotiable. But I'm giving the patient a choice on how that happens. Either I will alert her or we can tell her together. Either way, she's going to know, which is the important part about fulfilling the goals of therapy, that their communication be improved. I find that when I give choices like this and explain my thinking, that the patient will likewise be very candid about their thinking and their motivations. With all of my patients in this age range, we have a discussion about confidentiality in the first intake session, where I explain I will hold confidential the things they tell me, as that is important because they are growing into their adulthood and it helps for them to practice with safe adults. But I also let them know that there are limits to the things I will keep confidential, and safety is what defines the limit. In other words, they are made aware from the very beginning that I will get their guardians involved if they are doing unsafe behaviors. You would think children would tell you less concerning things when you do this, but I find for teenagers in particular, they appreciate the candor and will end up sharing whatever they need to say. In this generic example, it's common for children to go ahead and explain something like, "Yeah, I was just going to check my messages," which could lead to some good discussions about what kind of messages might be there for them to check, and some information about the people who are sending them those messages. I find that it helps their cognitive maturity at this stage to both step through my own thinking and wait for them to do the same. Their instincts are to do risky behaviors. We can't get around that. That's part of the human development at this stage. And no amount of talking them out of those instincts or shaming them for them are going to reduce the instinct they feel. However, one thing that can tamper it is to provide them with clear thinking and expectations and ensure that those expectations are in place to support them. Teenagers, all people really, can sense if you are doing things because you care for them. And this seems to get them interested in caring for themselves as well, and gradually, over time, making better decisions. Again, thank you for your interest in this topic. This concludes our review of Erikson's stages, and we will be exploring many similar and more topics in the upcoming year, and I look forward to sharing it with you. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.